Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Now, first to two female Irish founders who recently made the coveted Forbes 30 Under 30 in Europe 2023 list. The Forbes list includes young innovators, entrepreneurs and leaders who are under 30 years of age and are seen as transforming areas such as business, technology and social entrepreneurship. Galway native Gráinne Mullins of Grow Chocolates and Dublin native Aisling Byrne of New, and that's spelled N-U-W, are both going global, fuelled by a real can-do attitude. Gráinne is joining us from our Galway studio. Aisling is here in our Dublin studio. Aisling, to you first. Give us your elevator pitch. What is New?
I'm Aisling. I'm the founder of New, which is a marketplace where you can trade your clothes instead of buying them. So really, we're here to replace the likes of Shein and those ultra fast fashion brands that have just increased consumption astronomically. So how it works is clothes that you have in your wardrobe that you really don't want anymore and you're really struggling to resell, upload them, you get a coin. That coin is your way to get another piece, and it's just a euro fee for every transaction that takes place. So it's sustainable, it's affordable, and it's kind of everything we need considering how the planet is going right now.
Gráinne Mullins, match that in terms of your elevator pitch.
So yeah, as you said, my name is Gráinne Mullins. So I'm the owner and founder of Grow Chocolates. We're a luxury chocolate business that hand paint each and every single one of our chocolates. So they're not only made to look beautiful, but of course they taste beautiful as well. We have a premium range that are available online through our website, but also then through Brown Thomas stores nationwide. And also we just launched in Dublin Airport this summer as well. So we have and the most amazing, delicious chocolates made with the most fantastic Irish ingredients.
Aisling, take us back to the beginnings. You've been working on the concept, I think, really since 2017. But bring me back to the days of Trinity Bowl and the gap you spotted in the market. What were you doing back then that has led to this business today?
So I think with any good entrepreneur story, you find yourself kind of led by the problem. So I was studying music at Trinity, which is totally random in comparison to what I do now. And I think that sometimes people think they need to be a certain type of person or studying something to start a business. But actually, it's just like the frustration tends to get you there more so than the studying. So I had spent time in India back in 2013 with an Irish NGO called Suez. It was just after the Rana Plaza building disaster in Dhaka in Bangladesh. So a garment factory in the centre of the city collapsed and it was catastrophic.
I think 1,000 people
died.
Yeah,
1,130 and countless people injured, unable to work again. Really catastrophic, and it just kind of showed me the social and environmental impact of the fast fashion industry. And I was at university, so that was just my whole life. Like, I didn't know it was fast fashion. It was just, you know, going shopping every weekend and spending as little as I could. And what I could see was kind of a group of friends who just didn't have another way to access fashion that was more sustainable. And I think even back then, like, it wasn't on the billing for fashion brands as it is now. It was really something that was kind of aside or outside of the fashion industry. But what you could see was that resale was becoming more gentrified. It had to be professional, and fast fashion was becoming cheaper than secondhand. So we need something that's going to be accessible to the mass market. And we took clothes from each other's closet all day, every day. And if we can do that on a grand scale in a more formalised way, we can really replace our first time buying. So that's kind of where the idea came from. And I tested it on WhatsApp at Trinity Bowl the first time. And I said, do you have something you wore last year that you're not wearing this year? Can someone else take it? And basically they said yes. And then here I am several years later.
And here we are, a business that is making headlines all around the world. And Gráinne, for you, you had spent 10 years in fine dining, Michelin star restaurants. Take us back to 2019. You just won an award. What happened next?
November 2019, I had just been awarded with the Young Chef of the Year in Ireland with Eurotox. So I was over the moon, and in my head, 2020 was going to be my year to take over the world. But unfortunately, as we all know, when March hit, everything in my calendar started cancelling one by one. And I went from somebody who was working about 60, 70 hours a week in fine dining kitchens to all of a sudden having ultimate free time, and I didn't know how to cope with that really. So I did struggle. I struggled during lockdown to trying to keep myself busy, but I went back to absolutely loving kitchen, cooking for my friends and family, cooking, baking, and every single day I'd be doing something to keep myself entertained. And one thing I decided to do just before Easter Sunday was make hand-painted Easter eggs for all my friends and family as a pick-me-up treat. I posted these on social media, Instagram and Twitter. And from there, loads of people wanted to buy them. And this is what brought on the idea of Gras chocolates. I think it was my mum that said to me, she said, these are amazing, Gras, maybe this could be the business you've always wanted. So from there, I started researching, started looking into business plans, how to create it, looking up the local enterprise office, trying to figure out everything. One mentor said to me, she said, now, I really think you should call Leo. I had no idea who she was talking about. I thought she was talking about Leo Varadkar, and I was kind of wondering what he would want to do. What would the Taoiseach want to know about me starting a business? But she was actually talking about the local enterprise office. So I suppose I was completely naive going into it, but it's been the most incredible 3 years.
Amazing. And you've since gone from your parents' kitchen counter out to the parents' shed and now your own factory in Galway. And Aisling, to bring it back to you, so this concept that came about from WhatsApp, these conversations with your friends at Trinity Ball, is now an app where people can do these digital exchanges and get their coins and do the swaps. Like, talk to me about some of the numbers. How many downloads? How much have you fundraised? How global? How many markets?
So we're live in Ireland, the UK, and then we just launched in the US a couple of months ago, which was really exciting. I think that's when you start to realise that this is really taking off. 70,000 downloads. We've done 50,000 listings on the platform that are going off to get their new life. Raised just under $2 million. So probably the same in euros, whatever that conversion rate is now. And we're just about to close another round of funding as well, which is kind of in the works, excitingly. So it's just been incredible to kind of see that growth of users and how many people are interested in the idea. And really the pent up demand, you know, there's genuine need and want to be a bit more sustainable, but kind of keep that similar lifestyle where you're feeling like you're not sacrificing something in fashion. So, growing really quickly and excited to see where it goes next.
And Gráinne, for you, you haven't gone the fundraising journey yet. The business is still 100% owned by you. But what next? Like, you want to go into more markets. What's the numbers? How many people? How many markets? What's the size of that factory in Galway compared to the parents' shed now at this stage?
The chocolate factory originally in my parents' shed was 10 square metres. So now we're 30 times the size of that, which is incredible. But as we're learning, it's still not enough space. But it's been such a journey. We've grown quite fast. So there was an amazing demand online during COVID. And then as the markets opened back up again, it's just been continually growing. So currently we ship to anywhere in Europe. Then we're just launched into the US as well. So you can now ship the chocolate straight to the US, which is absolutely amazing. But we're also looking into the Middle East, and we want to get a retailer on board that matches in who we are, what we do, the luxury, the fine food. So we're really in the market for trying to match it up. But we're putting a lot of work now into our marketing because we know we can reach customers throughout the world without actually having to find a retailer. We can do it through our website to begin with. And that's a really exciting way to be able to interact directly with your customer, build a relationship with them and have the loyalty. We actually have an incredibly high return customer rate of 79%, which shows a lot of loyalty, but it also shows that when people come to us, they stay coming back. So that's where I need to keep growing the market, keep understanding the customer.
And who are the customers? Are these people who just appreciate Irish produce at, you know, a very high quality with the artistic piece that goes with it? Is it the Irish diaspora? What draws them to come in the first place and keep coming back?
I think in the first place, they get attracted potentially by the colour. If they haven't heard from them before, it can be the story as well, how it founded, my past as well. Having worked as a pastry chef, there was a lot of credibility built there with the customers and people that would have eaten my desserts previously. So all of that kind of built up to help at the start. But I think it's then once people have bought them, they see the ease of purchasing, they see how easy it is to buy, to rebuy, and how we want to treat our customers the best we possibly can. So we want to get the orders out to them as quickly as possible. We want to handwrite their gift notes, make it feel special, make it feel like they're either treating themselves or treating somebody else. People sometimes don't realise the amount that we think about in back of house to make sure that the customer has the most amazing experience. When I worked in Ashford Castle many years ago now, but they called it the TNTs, the tiny noticeable touches, and that going that little bit further, interacting with that customer, making them feel special. And that's what I want my box of chocolates to do.
is it largely women? Are there any men swapping their clothes online?
We find it's generally geared towards women, generally Gen Z, but there's a lot of millennials on the platform as well. Funnily enough, whenever we chat to people who are more the boomer generation, so kind of like my mum's generation, she's like, this actually makes so much sense to me because I used to do this far more than you did. Like, I grew up with fast fashion at its kind of evolution. Trying to kind of backtrack on that is actually more difficult. I think Gen Z really have grown up with this idea that sustainability needs to be a part of our life. So we really look at our user very much as the person who genuinely cares. Like, they know that there's a problem there, but it needs to be affordable. So it's a lot of us who shop fast fashion, and look, we know it's not the best thing to do, but it's like, where are the alternatives? And are they easy to access? Not just price-wise, but just in your everyday life. Is it something that's fun? Is it something that's as gratifying as shopping fast fashion? So that's really how we think about our consumer. We don't go down specifically that sustainability route because we know that there's only a fraction of people who can really have the bandwidth to take that on board. So we're making it more mass market than that. It's always a different experience. And I think that's why we kind of go into our friends or our sisters or our cousins' wardrobes. We don't really care that much about where it's coming from. Like, ultimately, we just want to feel great. And I think what fast fashion has done is it's kind of taking that away from us because it's made the cost so low. The actual trades and the ability to have a sell through in secondhand increases astronomically for fast fashion. So it's about 10 to 20% for traditional thrift. It's 60% on new because people all of a sudden really want these clothes.
Is it important to say, though, it's important to get out of Ireland quickly? The market is just too small. You got to go Asia, US and beyond, and it's possibly easier to scale and grow there.
Completely. Like, the market share that we have in Ireland, if we were to have that same market share even in the UK, we would be doing so much bigger quantities. So it's about realising that the you need to go further to reach the potential and to get those chocolates worldwide. We still want to keep our quality high. We want to make sure we're giving a really fine quality product to the customer and wherever they are. So I suppose the likes of amazing couriers and being able to reach them like that is absolutely incredible. That's why as well, using that Irish language, being proud of us. And I do have to say, Bord Bia have done an incredible job over the last few years creating Ireland as a trustable food destination. And there's a huge amount of high respect for Irish food, Irish meat, Irish dairy. So thankfully, we are a country that we're recognised for fine quality. And that makes my job that bit easier as well.
Aisling, what about for you, maybe trying to fundraise here? Was that something you tried when you were going for that seed fund of the 2 million at the start? What is it like to try and get working capital here in Ireland?
So I did try, and then I just moved country. If that's not too blunt to say. Venture capital is just a different kettle of fish altogether. You're looking for kind of high risk, high reward, but you're essentially saying, like, this is our bet and what we believe the future is going to look like 5 to 10 years out, not what it is now. And I think there's kind of two sides of the difficulty of fundraising, just in general, coming up with ideas that are simply creating a new market in itself. And the second is just fundraising as a female founder. I think potentially when I would have started in Ireland, it would have been a kind of the intersection of, do people believe sustainability is a good enough business proposition? Now that is yes, but it just wasn't here at the time. Impact investment was seen as, it gets bucketed in with social enterprise, which I have quite a few issues with, because I just believe fundamentally businesses should be good and they should be called something else if they are otherwise, rather than bucketing good business in with generosity or it's something that can't financially make sense. The market is in Ireland, and I do fundamentally believe that you can run a really good business here, but the funding and the risk just isn't here.
Is it one, yeah, there's the lack of maybe sometimes being fully informed about the potential, but also just a risk aversion?
I mean, like, we're a smaller population, so you're going to have a smaller pool all around. And I don't think that we can kind of use that as something that's difficult, because that's kind of what we're working with. And we have amazing entrepreneurs. I just find that so many of the entrepreneurs have to leave. And I think when you go to the States, the mindset is more, this is really hard to build. But when you build it and it works, that's it. Things change. I think Europe in general is, that's really hard to build. We just shouldn't try. And I feel with sustainability and especially climate tech, like, it's all or nothing. Like, we're just not here if we don't figure it out. Mm. And we can't pretend like just improving what we have in small doses, bit by bit, is really going to get us anywhere near where we get to be. Like, you get the kind of ChatGPT is coming out, you get electric cars coming out, you get all of this when you just go all in on the way the future is going to work. And I think that we have the talent that is going to allow us to do that and pioneer that. We just need to fund the talent, like it's in Ireland. And I've felt that everywhere I travel, Irish entrepreneurs are so incredibly respected. Like the kind of reputation we have internationally is just unmatched. Like they know we're there to do it. They know we're creative. We're such a creative society. I just kind of wish we could do it at home.
Let's take all of that as read, right? What is the gap then between your belief that we can do it and be ambitious versus the reality of 6% of global VC monies going into female-founded businesses? And we see that pattern play out across a lot of different databases.
I see it in two ways. From a female founder, I think we have a lot of bias going in behind us. I just kind of find that the best way to do it is just like suck it up, get it done, hope that you can invest in women later. Like that's how a lot of kind of my female founder friends would look at it and how we kind of chat about it. The other thing that I think is different in the States is that you have ex-operators who are now the investors. And so their understanding of how you fundamentally build a business and the nuggets of kind of gold that you're going to want going forward, they can see them in the initial vision and idea. A lot of what you get in Europe are, I call them finance bros. They've worked in banking or they've worked in investment banking and they understand a P&L sheet, but they don't necessarily understand what it's going to take to just be the person who shows up every day for 5 to 15 years and just says like, we're going to figure this out because the market is there. And so I think if you get a mix of belief and backing of female founders in an authentic way where you're not doing it for press, you're actually putting your money where your mouth is, and that just doesn't come from having another mentor program about how women can learn to raise. Like, we know how to raise, just give us some money. And then just getting more entrepreneurs to go into funds in the Irish market. You know, like a lot of people are exiting, they're doing really well, but they're going to stick it in places where they think entrepreneurs are going to be able to raise more. And they're encouraging Irish entrepreneurs to go elsewhere. And like, I would back that for now.
Bronya Mullins, to bring you in on that, you haven't taken funding yet. What's been your impression so far? And is anything that Aisling's talking about there, does that resonate as a female founder here in Ireland today?
Yeah, so I've decided to self-fund it and with the aid of bank loans, which has been its own challenge. But I just knew that our business had more potential there. I know that there's more that we can give as a team. So I wasn't feeling like I was in a huge rush, but I have been getting to know potential investors, keeping the doors open, discussing with people. You have to be quite strong. It's not just straight up. It's not standard that we'll just get accepted in. And it's a difficult process as is. And I think it can be made more difficult by having an idea that potentially may not be understood. And seeing the potential of that, you can get really grilled. You can get asked some very serious questions. You can also be told you look really pretty when you go into a proper business meeting, which is not something you want to hear. You just want to be treated like an equal. So I just try to bypass it if I can. I try and ignore it. I have younger and older brothers that I've had to battle through in my entire life. So I do try and not let it sink into my head, although at times it can. But I try and look forward and I try and think of myself as an equal in my hope that that way that I will also be treated equally. And I'm very quick to shut down anyone that tries to tell me that I'm wearing high heels or anything like that, because of course I can.
Aisling, what do you know now that you wish you knew back in 2017 starting out?
Probably that you do genuinely know your business and your customer more than anyone you will meet for a brief 10 minutes. And a lot of people will try and kind of give you not so much unsolicited advice, but their own play from their own background and their own experience. And I definitely took that to heart and it slowed me down. And now when I go out, I'm like, that's great. That's either another no or another piece of advice or some helpful advice along the way. But ultimately, the best relationship you're going to have is with yourself, and you kind of need to 100% back yourself regardless of anybody else in the team that you're working in, and then naturally just start building the confidence in yourself. I think if I kind of stuck to my guns, I would have got there faster.
The same to you, Gráinne Mullins. Like, what do you know now that you wish you knew maybe back at the start of 2020?
I suppose so much. I was completely naive going into it, and I literally threw myself into the deep end trying to learn as much as I could. I did every business course that was possibly around. I did every small little thing because I didn't even understand the jargon, how to set up a business, where do I even start? I suppose I've been thrown into the deep end to learn as much as I possibly could, and I put that pressure on myself to make sure that I could do the best with Gras chocolates. But I wish I believed in myself at all times as well, because you can get knockbacks, you can get upset, you can have a hard day and think, why am I doing this? But you also have to believe in yourself. You're here for a reason. Your customers are there for a reason. People are following you, following your journey. They want to have this product. And when you can just accept that, take in the good things and try not to take any little criticisms to heart. And one thing I have with Gras chocolates is I say mistakes happen all the time. I just say, okay, let's make a plan, and how can we mitigate that for next time? What can we put in place to avoid that? And accepting that you learn from mistakes, you build from mistakes, and as long as they're not repetitive and creating really big issues, everything will be okay.
Here in 2023, we're reading about the two of you on the Forbes 30 Under 30 in Europe as ones to watch. In 5 to 10 years, what do you think you might be talking about in the studio here in RTÉ when you're back to kind of give us the update? How big can this get?
I've always believed new is fundamentally a global business. So I hope to be back here in 5 to 10 years' time saying, remember ultra fast fashion? Remember we did that? That's all I want to do.
Well said. And Grainne Mullins?
Well, I hope to have my gorgeous big chocolate factory purpose built. So that's where I'm aiming to right now. I'm trying to make that dream come true. And I stick by my motto. I always say, dream it, believe it, achieve it. So I'm always just setting myself little missions and taking it day by day to get closer and closer to that.
Grainne Mullins and Aisling Byrne, thank you so much for joining us here on Reignite.
Thank you.
Thank you.